honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a fascinating and colorful visit with 91-year-old retired fighter pilot Bob McCoy of Fairfield, California. He told us about the mission that earned him the Silver Star. And you said, Bob, on that mission, your F-105 Thunder Chief took 3 hits.
I'm sure that wasn't the only time your plane got shot up a little bit or you had a close call. Are there some other memories that stand out?
On my 71 missions, I had battle damage on 17 missions. I came home with battle damage.
What were some of the most significant examples of that?
Our Bombay tank held 390 gallons, I think it was. But I took a hit in my Bombay tank, and it was our good get-home fuel. Really, you know, once you left Vietnam, if you had 3,000 pounds, you could make it to Karat. But with my $2,900 or 2,900 pounds in my Bombay tank, the bullet went in and did not explode. It just left a big hole and started draining my tank really slow. And you put pressure on it to feed it to your other parts of the airplane, and it was really shooting out, you know. The guy said, you're leaking your fuel, you know. So I didn't dare use my afterburner because it was all would have really been a big fire back there. I ended up having to land at Budorn, which is in northern Thailand.
Are there any of those 71 missions that when you think back on them, you say, boy, I'm kind of surprised I made it through that one?
Anytime I flew on Reiser's wing, I was happy to get home. Because he always found something to fire at. We started having some MiGs and we started carrying the outboard, the air-to-air missiles, the heat-seeking missiles. And so I'm on his wing one day and we fired at some fuel tanks. So we had a small fire going by one of them. He says, let's save our missiles at that and see if we can take the whole thing out. He never liked to bring home any ammo. Robbie Reiser, if he had any 20 millimeter left, he would expend it somewhere.
So he liked to take chances.
Oh, yeah. He knew that if he could start a bigger fire, it would be better. He came home, he made Brigadier General. He lived for quite a few more years, but he's since been gone at least 5 years, I guess.
You can link to more info about the late General Robbie Reisner at hometownheroesradio.com, but you mentioned a moment ago MiGs.
How often or how frequently did you end up engaging with enemy aircraft?
The MiGs were more after we'd finished in 67. We just had the AK-AK and the SAM missiles, and then they started getting more MiGs in there, finding a place that we didn't dare hit their airports for some reason. So they had a place to operate their MiGs from. It was more from after 1960, mid-67 till the end, mm-hmm. that the MiGs were more of a pain.
How do you know what to do if you get a MiG on your tail?
Well, you drop your own bombs, clean your wing off, and the F-105 could outrun a MiG. If you were going downwind, you could go in afterburner and still, even with a load of bombs on, you could outrun the MiG. As long as they were going the other direction and they had to turn around, they would never catch you.
Again, if any of these questions are dumb or seem goofy, forgive me, but being over there as long as you were, flying 71 missions, and you see these other guys get shot down, I'm just wondering if you had mentally prepared yourself for the possibility of being shot down, of being a prisoner of war, or worse.
Oh, yeah, you had to be prepared. It was just one of the things you had to accept. There was always a possibility that you might not make it back for this mission. But we never had anybody abort because of it.
I guess maybe that's what I'm getting at, and you would know better than anybody because, you know, you flew those 71 missions, and you flew with a bunch of other guys. Guys who survived close calls, guys who got shot down, who had to live for years as POWs. What did it require? What kind of courage did it require to be one of those F-105 pilots in that squadron?
You just had to be a 105 pilot. That was what we were trained to do. You had to accept it. I don't remember ever thinking about it. We have one guy that every time we were briefing for a mission, he would have to go his pants. Really. I mean, he'd spend half the time on the pot, and he'd come back in, and he'd finish the briefing. He'd go do it again. But once you got him in the air, he could do it.
Of all the aircraft that you got to fly, is there one that you appreciated the most?
Well, the F-105 for a fighter, yes. It's the one I flew the most of, and the one I flew combat in. The other one was the F-100. I enjoyed that. The F-86 was just a training airplane for me. Stateside, no combat.
Was it a tough decision for you whether to stay in the Air Force or not after 21 years?
No, I was 35 years old when I retired from the Air Force. That was the last year hiring for an airline, so that's the reason I went ahead. And I was at Waco, Texas, and I applied for World Airways, got accepted, so I went ahead and retired. Because they were moving from Waco down to Austin, and because I just been promoted to major, because I had 8 years enlisted time, you know, and so I had 12 years commission. It worked out fine, and I didn't have to stay my extra year because of the move, and so I managed to retire at age 35 years, 6 months, and 26 days.
And I don't think there are too many people that can tell us that they served more than 20 years in the Air Force and retired at age 35.
That's probably true.
Can you imagine a 15-year-old today going into the Air Force?
No, I can't. I can't. I really can't.
How do you think your Air Force experience contributed to your civilian career as a pilot?
Hour-wise, I didn't have that many. I only had about 6,000 hours of military time. And after 26 years with World, I ended up with 26,000 hours.
And did you enjoy that, flying for the airline?
Oh, yes, I enjoyed it. Yes. Coffee, please.
When's the last time you flew? You were in the cockpit.
1994. I turned 60 in 92, and that was the cutoff date. And because I was a check captain, I got to stay on for 2 more years. I probably could have stayed a little bit longer, but I would have retired.
And I'm just wondering, there may be some people listening that are thinking about a career in aviation. Maybe they even want to be fighter pilots like you were. I've got a nephew who's at the Air Force Academy right now, and that's what he's hoping to do. What kind of advice would you have for a young man or woman who wants to follow in your footsteps?
Just set your goals and get with it. If you're in the Air Force Academy right now, you got it all laid out for you. Really. Mine was such that I didn't have much choice. I managed to get my pilot's license before I even got into aviation. I had more hours in my little Super Cub than my instructor did in primary pilot training, you know. He was a F-80 pilot in the Korean War. My instructor when I went to the primary pilot training at Baylor, Georgia, when he found out I already had my private pilot's license, you know, he said, "You got more hours in the damn airplane than I have," you know. So it was pretty good.
Everyone's story is unique, but if there's such a thing as more unique, I think yours is right up there. And I can tell you enjoy talking about the lighthearted moments and the fun memories and the things that made you laugh. But there's a serious side to the era in which you served too. And there's a wall in Washington, D.C. with 58,000 names on it. Are some of those names of guys that you knew?
Oh, yes. Not so much in the Korean War, but in the Vietnam War, yes.
Have you been there to the Vietnam Memorial?
Yes, I have. It's an experience to go around and look at the names. I know where to look for them, you know, because of the area or the years. And quite a few of them are there.
Well, and if you're able to share, what goes through your mind? What do you think about when you see those names on that wall of guys that you knew and you served with?
Well, I miss them. I think of them. I prayed for them. And I thank them. That's all I can say.
And I guess that's, you know, because you have a perspective that so many of us wouldn't, because you did things that we didn't do. And clearly the implication is your name easily could have been on that wall too. But when you say you think about them, can you help us understand the significance of their sacrifice? Why it still matters all these years later?
What gets me is the people that did not appreciate the fact that we were defending our country. Any way you look at it, wherever we were fighting at, we were defending our country. And a lot of people don't understand it. Yeah. That's what makes me mad.
Understandably so. And I just realized I forgot to ask you about something I noticed in your shadow box of medals on the wall. Not far from that silver star there, I see some jump wings. What's the story there?
The 105, that each squadron had to have 2 jump qualified people to jump in with the Army for close air support. Mm-hmm. And so I volunteered to go to Fort Benning I was running 4 miles in the morning, 4 miles in the afternoon. I had broken in my boots by soaking them in water and then leaving them on until they dried. So I went down there, and it was a good experience to go through the jump school down there, Fort Benning. I was 31 years old when I did this. The old sergeant that gave me the entrance exam, he ended up being one of our leaders. And so he's a number 407. That was my helmet number. Right guide. So I got up there, and I could run those 18-year-old kids, so they'd all be vomiting. They go, number 407, right guide. And go, not that old man again. It was pretty good. I was in pretty good shape then.
Most pilots don't ever want to have to deploy a parachute. How did you take to the jumping off the towers or the actual jumping out of a plane?
We had to do 5 jumps out of the airplane, and we jumped off the tower a couple of times. Mm-hmm. It was a good experience. I enjoyed it.
No problems?
No problem whatsoever. I had dislocated my shoulder playing at the squadron officer school, and so my very first jump, I dislocated my shoulder, and the old sergeant was right behind me. In fact, he walked across my chute. I said, Sergeant, come here, grab my arm, pull it, and he could feel it, it slipped back in position, and then I'd go ahead and butterfly my chute, and he said, let me get your chute for you. I know I can do it now. It was a very, I had to do 4 more jumps, but I only dislocated it on my first jump. My wife got, I would roll over in bed and dislocate it. And I'd wake her up. I'd say, honey, pull my arm,
Well, if there's anything I didn't ask you about, feel free to add it in. I do want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us this unique story you have.
Well, I tell you what, I really enjoyed my service career, and I enjoyed my airline career. I enjoy it here. I love being with other service people. Mm-hmm. I really do.
You mentioned that what you were doing at the time when you're flying in Vietnam and risking your life, that maybe it was not appreciated the way you wished it were, maybe it was misunderstood. Yeah. And a lot of people alive today didn't live through that time period, and they don't have any firsthand perspective. So how would you explain your perspective on what you guys were doing over there and what those 58,000 names on the wall represent today?
Well, you have to realize that if you didn't do that, where would we be at today? I've voted for these people that wanted us to do that. They were up there giving us guidance. Mm-hmm. And so I've sworn to uphold the U.S. Constitution, so I'll do it. No problem.
91 years is a long time. When you think back over those 91 years, is there something that you would say that you are personally most proud of or most thankful for?
What am I most proud of? I got 3 beautiful children. My wife was a nurse, an Air Force nurse. She was a wonderful lady. I only knew her 19 days before we got married.
How'd you pull off getting her to marry you in 19 days?
We were going up to her aunt and uncle. They lived up in Stigler, Oklahoma. I met her in Wichita Falls, Texas. I met her at the Officers Club. A good friend of mine introduced me to her, and I taught her how to play liar's dice the first night sitting at the bar. I had to buy her 3 drinks. I said, well, let's roll for dinner at Lister's Hickory Inn. And damn if I didn't have to buy her a $3.40 steak dinner. She lived in the nurse's quarters, and I was in the bachelor officer's quarters, so we didn't have any other place to go. So she says, I'm going to go up there and see my aunt and uncle this weekend. So I said, well, what time are you going to leave? She says, oh, sometime Friday afternoon, and I got to be back here Monday morning to go to work. I said, well, I'll be free. So I rode, she drove, and I rode up there. And her aunt and uncle were just beautiful, really a beautiful couple. It was her aunt, and we called him Uncle John, but it was actually her aunt that was his relative. We had a great time. He says, why don't you two come back next weekend? And I said, well, I think I can make my schedule. I was instructing there right through that jets for my revision course. She says, yeah, I can do that. So I drove the next weekend. We got up there on Friday afternoon. We drove up to Tulsa and went to a big dance. came back to their house, and we're sitting around having a nightcap before we went to bed. And her uncle looked over at me, and he says, you know, you two were made for each other. Why don't you two get married? He made arrangements for the judge to come to their house on Sunday, and we got married. And we had over 65 years together. So what was your question again?
I think you answered it. I said, what are you most proud of? And those sound like some pretty good answers.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Well, thanks to Bob McCoy and to his neighbors at Paradise Valley Estates in Fairfield, Kevin and Bea Olson, for introducing him to us. I hope you can join us next time when we learn about a new book that includes a riveting prisoner of war story you heard firsthand on this program more than a decade ago. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.